4.5 years ago, I had a woman on the podcast who was just starting a business. And although she believed she had something big on her hands, she had no idea what was ahead of her, including becoming a global company and being named one of Forbes 50 over 50. On this episode of the Grown-Ass Woman's Guide, you'll hear directly from Dani Klein. We'll talk about where she was, where she is now, and all the lessons that she has learned along the way.
This is the Grown-Ass Woman's Guide. I'm your host, Jackie McDougall. Dani Klein is a comedian, entrepreneur, and author of 2 books, Take My Spouse, How to Keep Your Marriage Happy, Healthy, and Thriving by Following the Rules of Comedy, and Afterbirth, Stories You Won't Read in a Parenting Magazine. In 2018, after her mom became depressed facing an Alzheimer's diagnosis, Dani had an idea. Here she is, back in March 2019.
I have like this dentist slash life coach. She's always telling me what to do.
Only in LA.
Right. And I said, man, I just wish I could hire a comedian to cheer my mother up. And the dentist, Dr. Messman, she was like, well, why don't you? Can you do that? Can you, like, what do you mean? And I was like, aren't I supposed to go to an agency or something? And she was like, no, why don't you just ask around? So I went home and I put up on Facebook looking for comedian interested in gerontology paid gig. And my phone rang like 2 minutes later. And it was my friend in New York, Amy Stiller, from a long line of comedians, Stiller and Mira. And she was like, oh my God, I just got off the phone with my friend Sue, who lives in LA, and she wants to work with seniors, and she's a comedian.
And that's amazing.
So she came over and she met my mother, and she just got right in her face and like was completely honest and was like, hey, what's going on? You know, I bet you don't want to talk to me, right? You don't want to talk to me. You're thinking, who is this schmuck just in my face talking to me? And the minute she said the word schmuck, like my mother's face just lit up and she like started giggling, and they were kind of off to the races.
It's been 5 years since Dani launched Laughter on Call, and so much has changed, but not everything.
I mean, it's like a blink. I remember sitting at your podcast because I remember also thinking, oh, I don't look right. I don't have the right t-shirt on. I don't have the right makeup on. And once again, same, nothing's changed in 5 years. I'm like, oh, wait, I don't have the right makeup on. But yeah, 5 years. Five years.
I went back this morning and listened to the episode just to refresh like where you were and all that good stuff. So it was March 2019. Go back 5 years ago. In hindsight, what are your thoughts?
I feel it was like completely divinely inspired. I've read recently like Michael Jackson or Prince or one, maybe Prince. They have this idea that like ideas just come through them. And if they don't take the idea, the other one will. It's like an old interview or something. And I really feel that way about like ideas come to me because I also, I don't know if you remember, I had the show Afterbirth, Stories You Won't Read in a Parenting Magazine.
I do,
ran
yes.
for 10 years and then was published as a book, and it was giving voice to people that we didn't really hear about. A lot of men, like the struggle of having a baby and the life change of having a baby, funny stuff, but still. And that was just an idea that came to me when I couldn't breastfeed and I was like, oh my God, I need funny stories about this. Please help. And this, the moment with my mother, which I've been reviewing as I reflect on the last 5 years, it was very clear. Like it was very clear. The minute she started laughing, I was like, oh, wait, like what? Like this has to be everywhere. And I think the rest of it has really been kind of divinely inspired in that it, the way that it has moved along, because right after that moment, and I don't know if this was true when we had spoken, I wrote an article about the experience for AARP magazine, and I got hundreds of responses, requests from the article asking for a comedian around the world. And simultaneously, Time magazine had published an article called The Science of Laughter, and it was a whole magazine about the positive physical, mental benefits of laughter. And also I had been in a dance class, oddly, with a woman whose mother had Alzheimer's, and she read the article and said, hey, I really want to support this. Come in and pitch to my team, because she had a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took my article and I took the Time Magazine issue and I made a Venn diagram. Again, I don't know how I made a Venn diagram. That's what I mean. Like, what? A what? But I did. I made three circles on a page. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what do you need for this business to grow? It would have to be people with Alzheimer's, comedians, and money, because I knew it was going to be private pay. And then I researched where's a lot of Alzheimer's, where's a lot of comedians. But that's what I walked in with and wow. did the pitch and then walked out with a really nice amount of money to launch. But all of it, all of it, all of it.
Just a few months ago, Forbes named Dani one of their 50 over 50, recognizing her for the massive impact she has made through laughter.
I just have to say, like, I had nothing to do with that. Truly, I didn't know about it. They just said to me, well, you were nominated for this. Will you fill out the application? And even at first, I thought it was a joke. Like, I thought it was somebody soliciting me, so I didn't. And then they came back and said, no, you need to fill this out for real. But that is the most recent example of like, oh, okay, I guess this really is meant to be in the world. And I'm feel very grateful most of the time when I'm when I'm not panicking. I feel really grateful to be the one shepherding it in. But somebody would have landed on it. It just like I'm lucky because of my life experience. I was kind of chosen to do it.
Yeah, so, that's amazing.
Big opening monologue.
Forbes 50 over 50 is pretty damn big. And I want to talk more about that. How did that feel? Your name along some of these women who you've probably grown up watching or knowing about or respecting. And here's Dani Klein-Modisette. Like, how did that feel?
Crazy town. It was not to be overly humble, but I was like, wait, what? Like, I truly was like said out loud. What? Because, right, because if you look at that list, it's such an, I'm on, truly when somebody says I'm honored to be a part of it, like I truly am. I'm like, yes, yes, Temple Grandin. Yes, I think that it's pretty nice to be even in the same universe as you. And so I'm incredibly grateful. And I do feel part of it is a function of having a different spin on something that can be so depressing and so sad, and to be kind of a force for good and possibility of relief, given what's coming, given the statistics of what's coming in terms of the people affected by Alzheimer's and other dementias. I think that was part of the recognition. It's like, wow, this woman is out there, but she's out there in a way that we probably all are going to need. So, so it was a great vote of confidence for the work that we're doing and to keep going.
Right. You mentioned like when you're not freaking out or worried. And so one of the things I love about you is how transparent and vulnerable you can be out there in the world. By this angle, it looks like, well, you came up with this incredible idea. You're making an impact. You're being recognized. You're making money. What could you possibly have to freak out about, Dani?
I'm a bit leveraged, as any entrepreneur is. So you have to be comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So I was an actor when it was an actress for so many years. And I lived, there were years early on, 25 years ago, where it was like, am I going to take the subway or have a bagel today? Like money was like really, I was so frugal and lived a very kind of very controlled life financially. And as soon as you step into the entrepreneurial space, like you have to be really comfortable with big numbers, big risks, like you're rolling big. And so I think that for me has been an adjustment. I remember hearing about like entrepreneurs, I won't mention who, but maybe he was president, and like the amount of debt, like billions of dollars of debt. And like the guy sleeps at night. Like, I don't understand that. Like I'm so conscientious and I'm so grateful to my investor that, and investors plural, that I am so like, that can stress me out. That's what can stress me out. Like delivering on what I've promised and everybody's expectation. I think that's probably the source of it.
Yeah, that's got to be an interesting life, given that everything that you created or did everything that you create sort of only impact you before. It was your book, it was your comedy, it was your show. I mean, your show, you brought in other people, but now you're employing other people, and that's a whole different life.
It's a whole different life. And California, as anyone who has a business in California will tell you, very hard on employers. It's a tough place. So, right. I am responsible for the livelihood of 3 people and 30 others. I don't support them fully. They're freelance. But a lot of people through COVID, I mean, I can't even tell you how many people I supported through COVID, which is one of the things I'm most proud of. People always ask me, what are you most proud of? The fact that I was able to keep all these artists going through COVID was like, I get chills just thinking about it. There was no restaurant work. There was no party work. Like, they showed up and we did events around the world. I was really fortunate that November, when we had to make the transition to virtual after, COVID. So it was like, March? And then by April, May, we were running virtual interactive lunchtime laughter from 12 to 12:30. I said, okay, well, let's at least do that. We assumed that it would be caregivers and people with Alzheimer's. Like, let's give them a break. They're so isolated. They're the most vulnerable population. And very quickly, perfectly lucid people were showing up who were stuck in their homes and needed to feel a sense of connection and comic relief. And so that started rolling. And from there, I was reading all these articles in the Harvard Business Review and Forbes and the Atlantic, the New York Times about HR, and they don't know what to do. They're overwhelmed with people's anxiety and fear and how is it going to work? And so we started pitching to all of these companies, and we landed in a newsletter called Snack Nation, not getting paid for that plug, but they were amazing. And of course, I thought when it was presented to me that I was going to get free protein bars. I was like, oh, Snack Nation. I'll take some protein bars. And no, it's actually a periodical for the business world, for resources. And that really is what blew us up. So for November and December of that year, like, I had people working 5 hours a day, just going from Zoom room to Zoom room to Zoom room.
Wow.
You know, dealing with like international teams. It was very, very wonderful. And I'm just so proud of that. And then it's now we're always adjusting. We're always adjusting. So
what do you think are the biggest surprises over the past 5 years? You start with this like small idea, want to get in front of people with Alzheimer's, which I think is incredible, not only for those who are diagnosed with dementia of some sort, but the families, like to see your relative or loved one laugh, to see them just let go and just be in the moment. I can only imagine how that feels, like seeing my own dad go through Alzheimer's. And so what did you think it was going to be? And then what surprised you about the whole thing?
Okay, well, I definitely thought it was going to be big. Like, that's the thing. I remember going, because I'm on a board of like the local, it's called MAPS Marketing and something professionals, all people who work in the senior space. And I remember one of them saying something to me about local and, you know, reaching out to California. And I was like, no. Like, yes. And yeah. I have a much bigger vision for this. Like, I think you have to, for anything that you do creatively, you have to have just the biggest vision, because you're probably not going to reach the biggest vision. But even coming close to it, even having that force and belief. And so I always did envision something very big. I didn't anticipate the corporate piece and like the mental, supporting mental health globally. Basically, you know, I have this talk that I'm doing now, you know, like shared laughter, the antidote to isolation and the key to innovation. Like, that idea that shared laughter is not just about reaching people in isolation for Alzheimer's, but it's actually like a universal non-pharmacological intervention that speaks to what is needed right now. And so I couldn't ever have anticipated that, and that COVID would bring to the surface just rampant feelings of loneliness. or across all sectors. And that, that we would have something that could actually help with that. Yeah. But it was in COVID when those people started showing up that I was like, oh, wait, like we're dealing with isolation globally. Wait, like that was the intention. The initial impulse with my mother was her feelings of isolation. I couldn't reach her.
Right.
And then when I saw her laugh with another person and she felt that sense of connectedness, that unique sense of connectedness, that's why when everyone was isolated, I was like, wait, I think we could actually really help with this. And so I couldn't, I wouldn't have anticipated the way in which it's grown, but I'm super grateful because one of the challenges of the senior space is funding. It really is. And COVID made that worse. You know, they were really up against it. A lot of these senior communities, just with the expenses of daily living and all that testing protocol that had been brought in and all the death, they were really, really compromised.
Right.
And so bringing in a company that to help your people laugh is like, yeah, we'd love to do that. But like, we're spending $100,000 a month on testing.
Right.
So I am super grateful that, that there's bigger application, but it's always in service of getting back to and continuing to develop the work in that space.
Yeah. Because I can only imagine it was like, a, oh, that would be nice to have and not necessary to have at that time.
Yeah. I mean, that's the constant struggle of the laughter piece, right? Is kind of making that leap for people from nice to necessary.
It's just so interesting because with all the science to back you up, it should be seen more as necessary.
Right. There is a lot being written about it now.
Timing is everything. I mean, it could it could be the thing that makes you or breaks you. And so, you know, we get out of COVID, we start to move on. And then how did you transition then? Into from what you were doing into where you are?
Well, again, we just continued to grow. So we still do virtual events. Like a lot of companies did not snap back. A lot of companies are still either hybrid or completely virtual. So for the hybrid ones, we started going in person. So we've been to Bristol Myers, we've been to Amazon, and we run the same thrust of what we were doing on Zoom. Now we run in person. In fact, I have one today for LA City Councilman Bob Blumenfield. We're going to go there and work with his team, get them all kind of connected and laughing, a little comic relief. And that'll be 2 hours. And I have two kind of training structures that I use based on a course that I taught at UCLA. I taught stand-up at UCLA for 10 years. So I kind of robbed from that and from my books and taking comedy out of the clubs and into your life and very specific tools and two acronyms. And so, yeah, so we go there and we just get people, you know, first get them present and energized and then kind of teach communication tools using improv exercises.
That's cool.
So
you're doing the in-person ones, you're doing the virtual. How often in your business are you actually working with the dementia patients or Alzheimer's patients? Is that just a small sector now of your business?
It's probably 40%. And we have like regular, lots of steady clients in LA for that. We're always looking for more because we don't even have to put anybody on a plane. And I have comedians around the country. We have a wonderful bunch up in Northern California that are going to be working with Coterie. I just went to New York and did a workshop with Coterie. That's a senior community that has like 450 offices. And here, I've also been teaching a memoir class for 3 years at Fountain View to 85 to 100-year-olds.
That's amazing.
Yeah, one of my people just turned 100, and we do shows quarterly. So we've done those on Zoom for 3 years. And then 100 people show up, like all their relatives from Europe and around the world come and hear them read their stories. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, we're all very connected to each other. It's been 3 years. We were just talking about it yesterday. And like, these people show up every week and they've told their stories and we've shared a lot. And I'm super excited for them. And I told them we were talking about like 5 years from now. And I said, well, I plan to still be here teaching all of you.
Good. So yeah. I remember when my dad was alive and he would go into the hospital for a variety of things, and they would put him in the hallway because they couldn't have they didn't have a bed, or, you know, and they would talk to him like he was just some frail old man who had, you know, no experience in his life. Like, I mean, it was just, it was really, really sad to me and really frustrating to me that here's a guy who raised 13 children, who survived. My mom was 39 when she died. He was 38 years old when he became a widow or a widower, I forget which one's which, of, you know, 11 kids. And then he got remarried and all this stuff. But he had lived a whole full life. He had done so much. He was so capable. And then, you know, here he was in his 70s and he was just being treated in this way that was just so disrespectful, and they just disregarded him. I feel like, what have you learned about senior citizens in the last 5 years?
That they're there. That they're there. You can't, you know, I used to see a lot of this. Oh, she doesn't look good. No, she doesn't. That's not good today. No. You know, and you're like, what? Hello. Like they're there. And so, and that is a lot of what we teach, you know, in the workshops, the idea of honesty, you know, because, you know, as a comedian, you know, it's funny because it's true. Like somebody who's willing to tell the truth and like just being honest with a person. And that was the, look, that was the original moment with my mother that if anybody's ever heard me, I tell the story all the time where the woman, you know, she pulled up a chair to my mother. She got at eye level with her and she told the truth. She was like, I know. You don't want to talk to me. No. You're probably thinking, who is this schmuck just talking to me? And, you know, my mother laughed because it was the truth. And also because schmuck is a funny word. But but that sense of like showing up and respecting that there's a person there and really checking in with them. And there's also such an opportunity to know them in a different way at this stage of their life. Mm. But you have to be willing to show up. People are super afraid of cognitive decline. They're just afraid. They don't, it's, it makes them so uncomfortable and feel so threatening that they don't, they have a really hard time showing up for it, which is why I break it down. I have this video where I'm like, five things you can do to have a successful visit with someone with Alzheimer's. In honor of the last day of Alzheimer's Awareness Month, I'm going to give you five tips, things you can do to have a successful visit with someone in cognitive decline, because it's totally worth it. Number one, bring food. Bring, you can break bread, bring a donut, bring a cookie. Maybe don't bring Ezekiel toast, not that tasty, but you can bring food and just share it. Number two, play music. Play some music. Before 1960, they love that music. And another thing you can do, bring some photos. Look at that. That's me. Yeah. And you can make up stories about the person. Just tell a story. It doesn't have to be true, but you can talk and engage. And maybe they will participate, which would be great. Also, you can dance. You can dance. You can dance. You can make it up. You don't have to be a good dancer. You can just bring that kind of energy. And last but not least, maybe they don't talk anymore, but you can make a funny face. You can make a funny face and they will make that funny face back. It's a little thing called mirroring. And you will have made that connection because they are in there. And so that's my gift to all of you. Five things you can do to engage with people in cognitive decline. It does matter and they will so appreciate it. And so do I. The first one is like, bring a donut. Like it's like, you know, like break bread. Like, ancient tradition, just break bread, create a connection. I'm hoping that if you give people simple ways and actionable steps to take, that even if you can only stay 20 minutes, it's 20 minutes more than most people. And they've had a human connection for those 20 minutes.
You know, there are a lot of listeners who might be in this whole, like, quote unquote, sandwich generation. They, like, you and I have teens. It's funny. We're listening back. You had an 11 and 16 year old and that was 4.5 years ago. So, you know, and my kids are like 16, 18, 19. And so, you know, we've got young adults on our hands.
Yes. 100%.
And there are a lot of people like us who are also then taking care of aging parents and trying to figure out that and feeling really, really stressed. And so mm-hmm. what have you seen from your kind of bird's eye view? Do you have any tips for someone who might be in that position to make it a little lighter or make it less stressful?
Yeah. So this is going to sound obvious. The first one is breathe. Mm. That's just, you got to breathe. You got to take the moment to just, like I always say, the breathing is the first building block of self-care. So you got to do that.
Yeah.
Also, big one is you have to accept imperfection. And not even just accept it, embrace it. Mm-hmm. Take it as an opportunity. Because it's all going to be nuts. You're never going to be perfect at it. And the more you can stay in the moment and be with what is, particularly cognitive decline. I just remember like trying to take my mother to the bathroom in a public place and her coming out with like, I don't like her pants, like, you know, craziness. Just, you're just, you have to improvise. And, you know, the sandwich thing, you do the best you can. And I think you are, in showing up for your parents, you are teaching your kids the value of showing up. So I think there's real value in that, even if it means sacrificing a bit of your quality time with your kid for this phase, not missing the big things for sure.
Right.
But you know, my theory about the parent piece is you need to do whatever you need to do so that after they go, you don't have to spend the rest of your life feeling bad and like, I didn't do enough. And I, never was this more clear. We did an episode of The Doctors and one of the doctors, it's like four doctors. They're all fabulous. But then the oldest doctor, we're telling the story. There's beautiful footage and the camera pans and he's teary. So of course they jump on that because it's such good TV. And they're like, oh my gosh, why, what's going on? Why are you crying? This guy's got to be close to 70, 60s. And he says, I don't know. I'm just realizing I could have done so much more for my mother. I could have shown up for my mother. And it was so, so moving. And that's what I think you need to protect as a parent and a daughter is they're going to pass and you're going to still be here. So what are you going to do to make sure that you have peace after they go?
Right.
Whatever that means for you, but you have to take the time to figure that out so that you protect yourself. I remember teaching a memoir class at Belmont Village in Westwood. Bunch of very smart, they're all like UCLA professors that end up there. And this woman, again, probably 80, writing about how much she dropped the ball caring for her mother and how it tortures her still. So that's the greatest gift you can give yourself is figuring that out and taking the actions. And your kids will understand. And obviously, if you have little ones, you got to get help. Or little ones you can sometimes bring with a toy or, you know. It was actually hardest for my oldest son, who was closest to my mother. He couldn't. It was very, very painful for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you got to just respect that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's impossible. It feels like an impossible situation. And the only way through it is 1 minute at a time.
I remember with my dad, he didn't know who I was anymore. And I just decided I wanted to be someone who, when I did see him, you know, he was in Massachusetts, I was in California, and I would go back and visit. And I just made a decision that I wanted to be someone he liked to see, regardless of if he knew who I was. And so that, you know, while I was visiting, it was like, I would come in and he was like, oh, hey, you know, he didn't know it was me, but it was just such a lovely thing where I was like, I just want to be a bright spot and sort of get out of my own way, because I could have stayed in that, and especially being the 11th of 13, like you already wonder if your parents, like, you know, you're a number sometimes because there's so many kids. And so when he was going through that, it was like, I had to let that go. I had to let that part of me go that wanted him to know who I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? I mean, it is an ego issue for some people.
Yeah.
Who feel like, nah, they don't even know me anymore. So, right. So then you have to make a commitment that you're going to be of service to another human being who loved you at one point, or,
yeah,
you know, relationships are complicated.
Yeah.
Right.
It takes a lot.
So, yeah. So again, it's like, it's up to you. If that was an abusive situation and you don't want to show up for that, just know that you're making that choice. Yeah. So that you can have peace.
Yeah, I think that's what it really is making the choice and not just hiding from, because you're making a choice regardless of what you do. So make it with intention and make it like, and it's okay if that's somebody that you have to let go of because Absolutely. Of whatever reasons. Don't just like not show up until that choice is completely taken from you and then you feel shitty forever.
Exactly. No, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to talk about you while I have you for a few more minutes. What have you discovered about yourself throughout this whole process?
That I'm very sensitive.
I love that you're a comedian. You probably can't talk about yourself in a real way.
I know. That's what they make fun of me, because I'll have to say one of my credits and I'll use a funny voice. And they're like, dang. You don't have to say Forbes 50 over 50. Like, you don't have to use a funny voice. You could just say it. Yeah. So I'm very sensitive. That's the hardest part. I'm very invested in my people who I feel have done so much for me and with me. And so I'm very sensitive about that. It was probably good that I was an actress and had all these other careers and whatever disciplines that I pursued leading up to this, because, you know, it really trains you for rejection. Mm. A lot of entrepreneurship is pitching. And as a trained performer and a comedian who's done solo shows, I had a pitch, a 1 minute pitch last week. So I scripted it. I memorized it. I lit myself. I wore better makeup than this. And I hit the ground running because I have 30 years experience, you know what I mean? And I'm in these entrepreneur groups and they're dancing as fast as they can. But like, are you kidding me? We're performers. So that's lovely. I'm super grateful. Instead of feeling like, oh God, I wasted blah, blah, blah. No, nothing's a waste. Like, it all contributed to my being able to show up for this. I think that's probably what I've learned. I always lead with my heart, which, you know, is the good news and the bad news. It's why it's like, I have wonderful people who work for me and they've all been with me for 5 years now. And that's unusual in a startup. And I think it's because I care so much. They know that I'm doing the very best that I can. And sometimes I make mistakes. I just wrote a blog last week about making a mistake. And kind of walked through that experience for me and having to own it. So to maintain the relationship and show how much I care about this person. But I made a mistake. Like, I don't know, like I did.
And how did you deal with that?
I called it out. I called her up and I said, I made a mistake. But like, I was upset all weekend about this. And by the way, it wasn't like a really big mistake, but the fact that I had in any way caused someone upset. And, you know, I just couldn't. Also, because my whole team are artists, they're actors and comedians. And I know that, like, they get rejected a lot. And I don't want their work for Laughter on Call to be another thing that, like, I want it to be the thing that builds them up.
Right.
I don't want it to be another thing where they have to feel bad. Like, please.
Yeah.
So.
But that's grown ass. That's grown. I mean, I think we all make mistakes every single day.
Yeah.
Right. And I think at a younger age, I may have been either like, well, I didn't mean it, so I don't know why you're taking it that way. You know?
Yes. I'm so sorry you feel that way.
Yeah.
It's a really good way to not take
it. Or double down. or like double down on like, no, that's not the way I intended, you know, or whatever. But now at 52, I'm like, oh, wow, I could see why that was received that way. And I apologize.
Yes. So. I just had someone, because I get solicited business constantly and I'm vulnerable to it. I'm like, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And so somebody sent me something yesterday about social, you know, we're going to give you 10,000 more followers and build your business by 5,000%.
Yeah.
And
by tomorrow night.
Right. And I didn't even watch the whole thing, but I have a social media person. So I sent that to her. I forwarded it to her. Mm-hmm. And then she slacked. Well, I thought this was off-putting, but I'll look at it. And I interpreted that to mean that she was insulted because she's my social media person. Why am I sending her a video about social media? And of course, for an hour, I was like, until I got her on the phone, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean to insult you at all. Like, I didn't even read that thing. And then she was, she said, I don't know what you're talking about. I meant I was off put by the video itself. I'm not.
Right.
You know, so there's a little bit of, you know, not paranoia, like oversensitivity, which can get in the way of business. And by the way, since it's the grown ass woman's guide, you're not going to have a man on here having this conversation.
No.
Like,
but you're not going to have a man out there having this conversation either.
Right. That's what I mean. It's very, it's so uniquely, I think, female and maternal and nurturing to have that kind of thought. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I feel bad. Right. Like, I don't want anybody to feel bad. I don't know a lot of.
Yeah.
What? You're going to feel bad sometimes. Like, suck it up.
Right. And we make mistakes and that's okay. And so, you know, you touched upon this a little bit. Like, for the past 5 years, it sounds like you have had to allow yourself to receive help, receive support. Was that a challenge for you?
I'm going to say no, because my very first boss out of college, this man, Jerry Zaks, he's a Broadway director, won a lot of Tony Awards. And I followed him around for like 3 years. And the one thing that I noticed that he did that made him a master, in addition to his talent and his vision, was he always hired the best people to do what he didn't know. So his design team was Ann Roth and this one and that one. And let them do their best at what he doesn't know how to do. Mm. And I run Laughter on Call the exact same way. I don't get in the ring. If my social media person tells me XYZ, I trust that's her area. And that sounds good to me. I really do put the people in place that have more talent than I do in other areas. And I trust them. Like, that's your party. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to clip that right there because I think we all need to listen to that. Because when you do that, it relieves you. I think a lot of grown-ass women have a hard time delegating, a hard time giving something to other people to do. And there are so many people out there that do X, Y, and Z better than we do. And so why would you not? Never mind the fact that I remind myself, oh, if I get someone else to do it, then I'm actually employing or like contracting someone, another grown-ass creative who now has some work, has more work. And so I think delegating is the best thing you can do for all grown-ass women and people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are areas where I am, they probably would say I'm a little bit nutty about language and anything written. Like, they'll be like, it's fine. I'm like, no, it's not fine. That shouldn't be a that. That should be a this. You know, like that's where I get really controlling is about language. Mm. And I'm a little bit, my team is in their 30s. And as we noted, I'm 60. So it is a generational thing. Like I wrote this piece. Oh my goodness. I'm not going to remember, but Don Rickles was the figurehead for the piece. He was the photo. And I chose a picture like this. Like, you know, for those of you just listening, like a smile. And she chose what ended up on the blog initially was this. Like Don Rickles sticking his tongue out. And I was like, no, I don't want to look at that.
Yeah.
But like, she's in a rock band. She thought that was totally fun.
Right.
So there's like a taste element sometimes where I err to probably to what they would call is conservative. Mm. Because I also think our client base is more my age and certainly corporate. I mean, we've had interviews. I can't remember which phone company it was with, but we went way down the line for a big gig for them. And then finally they were like, you know, it's too risky comedy. It's too risky. We can't do it. And even though we are an affiliative comedy company, I always say we're the Ted Lasso of comedy. Like, it couldn't be any more kid-friendly, grandparent-friendly, have cats walk across your face. Like, we're good with all of it. But people still, they get nervous about it being too edgy.
If you're enjoying this episode, I definitely recommend you go back and listen to Dani in 2019. It's really cool to hear where she was and what she's been able to accomplish. I will add the link to the show notes, but you can also find it at grownasswoman.guide/episode14.
What is one thing you want people to know about the work you're doing and what they should take away from this episode?
I am passionately committed to the belief that shared laughter will reach people and will, I hate using the word mitigate because it's the least funny word possible, but it does mitigate feelings of isolation and create a sense of belonging. And wherever and whenever possible, do your best to show up with a sense of humor and do what it takes to get yourself in that state where you're able to access your sense of humor. Because you never know who you'll be helping with that.
Yeah, I love that.
Thank you so much for having us. I don't know why I said us.
Because it makes it easier when we say the collective us. Sometimes when we say me, man, it's too much focus on me.
Exactly. But thank you for having me, because my intention really is to have people appreciate the value of laughter and have us come in, whether it's your caregiving staff that is feeling burnt out or your creative team that's feeling blocked, bringing in outsiders who are professionals that know how to create a sense of play and open that door for people, it is the answer. And so that's really what I want to get out there, because I really would love to have that message be more and more commonplace rather than just the risk takers, rather than the outliers, but to have it become more commonplace. Like, you hire a coach for so many things, like bring in a laughter team, because it's going to have exponential positive impact on your culture. Boom. Mic drop.
I love that.
Connect with Dani at laughteroncall.com or on social media at laughteroncall. Thank you so much for listening. Join me next week for another new episode with a grown-ass woman who's using her life experience to entertain us. I would love to hear from you. Please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and let's definitely connect on social. You can find me at grownasswoman.guide. And please tell a friend about the show. Until next time, you are a grown-ass woman. Act accordingly. Spring has sprung, and with the change of seasons, sometimes comes an increase in vitality. If you're feeling in the mood for a little more personal time, may I suggest Coconu? Coconu is all about providing clean and natural ingredients when you're enjoying your most intimate moments, with or without a partner. Naturally safe products developed by people who are obsessed with quality. Get 15% off with promo code GROWNASS at grownasswoman.guide/coconu. That's 15% off with promo code GROWNASS at grownasswoman.guide/coconu.